Network, proudly presents the Jay Slade Show. With your host, CyberGolf.com's own Jay Clemmer, and co-starring a galaxy of the golf and sports world's greatest names as special guests. Yo, 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 this is your main man, DJ Q, telling you to put your hands together for your friend and mine, Jay Clemmer.
All right, thank you, DJ Q, for bringing us into the Jay's Plays show in such style. He's absolutely right. I am Jay Flemmer, and you're listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network. Jay's Plays is brought to you by JB's Best. It's the spiciest, it's the boldest, it's the most amazing hot sauce ever. It's on every table in the South, and it should be on yours. When it says JB's, it's the best. Well, happy PGA Championship Week, everybody. It is an absolutely glorious day here at Baltusrol Country Club. The sun is up, the sky is blue, the clubhouse is ancient and rambling and gabled, and the golf course looks fantastic. The pros are pretty much ready to go. We've got one more day of practice, which means one more day to hear what their thoughts are on the golf course. But on that note, we're going to go right straight to fellow Golf News Net contributor Fred Atwater. Fred's coming back to help us with our PGA Championship coverage along with Ryan Ballingy. Fred, welcome back to the Jay's Place show.
Hey, Jay, always great to talk to you here at Jay's Place, one of the great Golf Talk radio programs.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Always good to have you on as well. Let's get right to it. What are your immediate impressions of Baltusrol?
You know, this is my first time here, Jay. I walked the course a little bit yesterday. It's absolutely gorgeous. And I was talking to Matt Janelle a little bit this morning, and he was saying in all his travels, this is one of the most beautiful places that you get to see. This is truly a magnificent golf course, Jay.
It is an ancient and storied venue. Baltusrol hosted its first U.S. Open in 1903, won by Willie Anderson, the only man ever to three-peat in the U.S. Open. In fact, he won in 03, 04, and 05. And then it has also had U.S. Opens on its lower course and the upper course as well. So it's the only venue in America to have all of its courses host major championships. Pretty cool.
Yeah, you know what? And Tillinghast laid this out, A.W. Tillinghast. And we interviewed Reese Jones, who's been involved here since 1954 as a teenager, working for his father, who did some of the original renovations and restoration back in the 50s. And, you know, they've done a lot of work to it over the years, but Reese said that, you know, one of the things that Tillinghast did, he made a lot of elasticity in the course when he originally designed it, when he built the two courses, so that they could stretch the tees, they could stretch the hazards to keep it viable for the longer players today, the better conditioned athletes, and the farther distances the ball is traveling. So it's truly a course that has been designed looking towards the future and able to adapt in every era.
Yes, and the one thing that the Jones family has done is, for the most part, kept most of the Tillinghast. Some people quibble over the fourth hole. But in 1954, when Ed Fergal won the U.S. Open here, he played a version that had been redone by Jones. But when I say redone, more or less restored and renovated than anything else. All the corners are the same, all the holes were the same. And then as Reese came along, he also left well enough alone for the most part. Reese told me in my interview with him that he had backed the greens all the way to the full edge of the green pad, and that they had also put some of the hazards into a position where they came into play more. But other than that, you know, left the original Tillinghast design there. Now, here is the big question. Why is it that Baltusrol surrenders so many low scores and low aggregates? Because each time we have come to the lower course since 1967, we have seen record-setting performances.
Well, one of the things we're going to watch for this week, as you know, we had quite a bit of rain here in the New Jersey area on Monday, and so it's really softened the golf course up. And, you know, the guys are going to be able to attack the pins a little bit more. I think the greens are going to be a little bit more receptive. And I know one of the things you like to talk about is the is the Baltus roll a curse or the ghost that runs around here and helps the ball into the hole. I'm not sure how that works, but the golf course should be receptive today. If you can hit it in the fairway, someone like a Dustin Johnson, someone like a Jason Day, a little bit longer. I think Rory's planning to attack a little bit if his driver's on. He could be a factor because they're just hitting short irons in, and these greens are going to hold it. And if they can figure out the breaks on the green, then they're going to shoot some low scores.
You know, there was something that Jack Nicklaus said all the way back in 1967, too. He said that Baltusrol is set up differently than most Open Championship venues and PGA Championship venues, too, in that the corridors are wider, the fairways are wider. And also, there are places where you can run the ball up. You know, you can't do that at Wingfoot, and you can't do that at some of the other venues that Towing has designed. But you can do it here, and it makes for a lot of difference coming out of the rough. Nicklaus said that that was one of the main reasons why he broke the scoring record back in 67. And then he goes and breaks the scoring record again every single round and aggregate and score to par when he comes back in 1980, one of the most legendary performances in golf history.
Yeah, Mickelson addressed that very point yesterday in his press conference, that on the longer holes, you have the ability to run the ball up on the green a la a links-style golf course, which a lot of parkland golf like we have here in the United States, you have to carry the ball in the air and fly it over a bunker, over some water, over some kind of hazard in front of the green. Here on the longer holes, you have that ability to run the ball up. The shorter holes have some bunkers and things they can put in your row that you got to get the ball up over those to get it on the green. But for the most part, on the longer holes, the more difficult ones, they give you a chance to at least run the ball up there a little bit.
So you mentioned several of the international players that you think are going to do well. You also brought up Dustin Johnson's name. Who else is on your short list of people to look for to win this tournament?
Well, after the performance that Henrik Stenson put in at the Open a couple of weeks ago, how can you not have him on your short list? I was watching him on the range a little bit yesterday. He appears to be loose. He was having a laugh with Ernie Els. They were joking around a little bit. Pete Cowan was there watching him, suggesting a couple things on some hip movement I was watching where Henrik was getting a little bit outside his right foot just a little bit. He had him stabilized on his right hip over his right leg a little more. And you know, you just can't count him out. There's so many great players, Jay, to narrow it down. You and I have talked. We're looking at 40 guys or maybe even 50 guys that have a real shot at winning this week. Even young guys like Justin Thomas or Matt Fitzgerald or, you know,
Smiley Kaufman.
Yeah, exactly. There's so many of these young guys that are ready to go. They're ready to break through. And we've had three first-time major winners this year. Are we going to have another first-time? Or is Jason Day, Rory McIlroy, Jordan Spieth, or Ricky Fowler going to pop up and maintain one of their big four status or that kind of thing?
Well, earlier, there's 30 or 40 guys that can win this thing, you know, and so there is kind of, you know, this, I don't know where they're coming up with big three, big four, big five, because the people that they're saying, you know, have a maximum between all of them of four, five, six, seven majors. Well, more than four if you got Rory in there. But even if you take the three guys that have the most majors right now, which would be Phil, Rory, and then either Harrington or, actually it would be Els with four, you know, four, five, and four, that only gets up to 13. If the big three, the real big three, had 35 between them, Player and Palmer and Nicklaus. So they got a ways to go before they're a big anything. But more than that, you also brought up the point of first-time winners. We've had three puzzling strangers win here at Baltusrol as well, though. In 1936, on the only time it was conducted on the upper course, Club Pro Tony Manero won, and it springboarded him to a career where he won eight times on the PGA Tour. And then Ed Fergal, also a Club Pro, in 1954 won, got to go back on tour, ended up winning a total of six events. But, you know, they were puzzling strangers, as was the odd duck of Lee Jansen, who actually won two U.S. Opens, but like Andy North, didn't win much else. So Baltusrol, you know, is a bit of a mixed bag. I believe it's partly because it plays a little short in places. There's a lot of birdie opportunities out there, more than you would see at an ordinary U.S. Open venue, you know, and more than you would see at a Winged Foot or an Olympic Club or an Oakland Hills or an Oakmont. You know, where do you feel that the players will be able to attack this golf course?
Well, you mentioned the shorter holes. That's what all the players say. They want to take advantage of the shorter holes and then just get their pars on the longer, more difficult. You mentioned one hole, number four, the par three, the great story about Robert Trent Jones. The membership was on him about making a hole too hard. He went out with some of the members right away and made a hole in one. He says, okay, this hole's eminently fair. So number four is a swing hole. You know, it's got to be watched. But to me, the most important part of this golf course is the last two holes. 17 and 18 are the only two par fives on the golf course, and they just happen to come at the end of the round. The one is a legitimate three-shot par five. Probably going to have to earn a birdie there the old-fashioned way. But 18 is short. You can get it. It's just a long par four, basically. Going to be a lot of birdies, a lot of eagle opportunities there. So that could really swing. If you've got a two-shot lead, you're in the clubhouse. It's not safe by any stretch of the imagination.
Sure, Jack Nicklaus went birdie-birdie to close out at Salaoke when he won in 1980. And Phil made a closing birdie to get one shot clear of everyone chasing him at the 2005 PGA. You also might want to take a look at some short par fours like 2 and 8. Now, people will wonder why we have this asymmetric routing of a 34 on the front and a 36 on the back in the last two holes of par 5. It's because holes number 1 and 7 have been reduced from their ordinary par of 5 to par 4 for this championship.
Yeah, and you know what? We see that the USGA likes to do kind of tricky things to set up their golf courses, making it difficult. And we should mention that the PGA, you know, they want players. They really don't care. If they go 20 under par, that's great. You know, you still have to shoot that to be among the leaders. So, you know, and the setup is fair. You know, the rough is not tremendously penal. You know, you can get it up and down from the rough. It's not like a U.S. Open rough where you just have to chip out and take the penalty and go on. So, you know, that's another reason why we may see lower scores here, because, you can move the ball even out of the rough. So it's just, you know, the PGA does a great job, I think, in setting up the golf course, which makes for a more exciting round of golf for the television watcher or the fan at home.
Yes, several of the players were talking about it, Graham McDowell and Kevin Streelman, first and foremost, about how the PGA is not afraid of birdies, and they set it up somewhere in between a U.S. Open setup and an ordinary tour stop. Kind of in the middle is what Graham McDowell said, and Streelman sort of agreed with him. It does lead to more birdies. It also leads to more 63s, though. We have seen 29 63s in major championship golf, 13 of which have been shot at the PGA Championship.
You know, Jay, I'm gonna go on a limb here. I'm gonna make a prediction here. You know, we keep flirting with this 62 in a major championship. I'm going to make a prediction that we see a 62 this week, and maybe even more than that, given the conditions, given the way the course is set up. It's a par 70. That's only 8 under par. We're going to see a 62 this week.
You know, ordinarily when guys say that, I scoff. I've seen a bunch of guys, you know, come up and say that in various places, but you read my mind this time. There's a possibility. It could happen, and it could happen here. I worry about it because of the alarming frequency with which this course gives up record-setting performances. And it's one thing to give up record-setting performances to Jack Nicklaus or Phil Mickelson. It's another thing to give up record-setting performances to Esau Aoki and Lee Jansen. Okay, Lee Jansen tied Nicklaus's aggregate scoring record. Jansen and Nicklaus, okay, that's almost as bizarre as the time Ed Scissorhands Gibstein tied a record of old Walter Travis's at Garden City. All right, almost as wacky as that. Okay, and Esau Aoki putting with the putter head in the air, the toe smashing into the golf ball. It would have been the best clown act in town if the ball hadn't stopped, if the ball hadn't kept going in the hole all day.
He knew how to putt. He was one of the most handsy putter ever. Maybe he and Chichi Rodriguez, but they knew how to find the hole, didn't they?
I made the big, big mistake of challenging him to a putting contest the day that I met him at Olympic Club, okay? And he probably gets sick of rubes like me walking up to him and saying, come on, let's putt nine holes just for fun. Okay, he gave me a scowl, pointed to a hole 30 feet away, and then promptly drains that one and the next two 30-footers. I was down by three, and I just looked at him and said, I've had enough. And I'm a good putter, okay? I'm a very good putter. That's the only reason why I had the C.O. Jones to do that in the first place.
But that's why you sit behind a typewriter instead of holding a golf club.
That's right. That's exactly right, okay? The chasm, the yawning chasm between those that do and those that teach.
Exactly.
All right, well, it's time for the trivia question, okay? As you know, on the Jay's Place,
you know I'm terrible at this.
you know, we got to do it. We got to throw a bone to our sponsors, okay? Besides, our sponsor's a golf writer, okay? John Burrell, what used to be a writer for the PGA of America, he quit to go chase his dream and make hot sauce. And now he's making everybody happy. Who doesn't like hot sauce, okay? Some milk toast bland nerdlet sitting in his Snuggie with hot cocoa asking, can I sit around and talk about health care with you on Christmas Day, okay? Went to Oberlin College.
In his mother's basement.
Surrounded by empty Pringle cans, alternating between, okay, golf
Cheetos.
Websites. Yeah. Okay. Well, or organic Cheetos, okay? Shop that he only buys the organic free at Whole Foods.
Gotcha.
Anyway, okay, so it's time for the trivia question. Your category is rock music and popular culture. Which famous rock star wore the big suit? Which famous rock star wore the big suit?
The big suit?
The big suit. He made it famous.
Well, Elvis always
He would
wore
come
the
out tall and thin. Tall and thin he would come out, clothes hanging off him like a scarecrow. And then they would blow that suit up, and he'd be larger than life.
You got
Name
me.
Him.
Not a clue. Not a clue.
We were looking for David Byrne of Talking Heads.
You're way over my. You're out of my league.
Out of curiosity, how good are you with rock stars that like golf?
Well, I know Alice Cooper.
He's quite a stick. Neil Peart's apparently quite the stick, too.
There you go.
So, anyway, it's been great having you on the show. We will consult with you a little bit later as we roll along during PGA Championship Week. Fred Atwater, everybody. Fred, tell everyone where they can read your stuff.
Jay, I'm at... Back 9 Media Group, the number 9, is back, B-A-C-K, the number 9, mediagroup.com. They can find my magazine, NWO Golf Links. They can find my radio show, Back 9 Report, there. I also do the Back 9 blog that I put some stuff up once in a while when I get a random thought and have to get it down on paper. So, they can find me anywhere. Just go to Back 9 Media Group.
And, of course, at thegolfnewsnet.com, I am Jay Flemmer. You're listening to Jay's Place on the Golf News Net Radio Network. We will be right back with the next segment right after this. DJ Q, take it away.
That bump music means we're going to have to take a short break. Don't go away. We'll be back at the second half of the show in just a minute.
This is your main man, DJ Q, and you're listening to Jay's Place on the Golf News Net Radio Network.